Welcome, Dumbheads, to MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. In this series, we are examining every single goddamn page of Palladium's Beyond the Supernatural RPG to determine what is the dumbest thing on that page. Every episode is one page, every episode is short. If you'd like to play along at home, this is Beyond the Supernatural 2nd Edition, the first printing from January 2005. Today we're discussing page 154 of Beyond the Supernatural, but not really. You see, the insanity section continues on this page. This material is disjointed, oftentimes offensive, sometimes dull, and thank God, almost entirely recycled. And you know what that means. It's time, once again, to delve into the Z-Files, the archive of dark arcanists, psychic masterminds, undead criminals, and sometimes all three, pulled from the pages of Villains Unlimited, the supplement for Palladium's Heroes Unlimited role-playing game. Today, we begin an appropriately multi-day discussion of case number 190, Triple Threat. There's a lot to say about Triple Threat, but let's start with a general survey of this multifaceted being. Quote, William B. Stone, a humble, soft-spoken groundskeeper, is Triple Threat. Well, sort of. William is an ordinary man, possessed by the essences of three-dimensional entities, unlike those known to parapsychologists. Each has a complete identity and believes itself to be the spirit of a deceased human villain from the past. These malignant spirits are constantly vying for control over their host body, and as a result, every 48 hours there is a chance that one of the other supernatural essence identities may take over. What follows is a fairly long passage about how these three entities vie for control of William. It's a complicated arrangement. They know of each other, they can communicate, they sometimes cooperate, they sometimes squabble. The only person for whom this arrangement is a pure and simple horror is William, and or William's boss at the graveyard. Quote, only poor William B. Stone is oblivious to the actions of the three possessing beings, remembering absolutely nothing. This only serves to scare him even more and make him all the easier to control. William has become completely submissive to the entities and prefers that they stay in control of his body. After all, people, life, and his place in the world have always scared him. Now he can hide within himself and let others deal with life's trials. William's personality type is very familiar. Without delving into current events too much, I think many of us can relate, increasingly, to the varying human attitudes toward being trapped with a small number of other flawed human beings in a small space indefinitely. William is the type who one day sort of quietly decides, you know what, the kitchen and the food within it are just not worth the trouble of seeing my goddamn roommates' faces one more time. Henceforth, I am staying in this room, and preferably in this chair, until this shit blows over or I die of failure to go to the kitchen. What's difficult about William's situation, especially for the people around him, is that, unlike in our current real-life shit show, William is the only person in this group who has a real human legal identity. He is the one who has a living family, relationships with the neighbors, a job, but he has firmly committed to staying in his room in that chair unless and until the three outlaw ghosts who share his body force him out to, like, go shopping. Which I submit, and this is not explicit in the text, must make him just the worst of the graveyard employees. In any case, William seems to feel that he is beneath either care or contempt, and I basically agree. Let's move on to the other three quarters of Triple Threat who are of more interest to the paranormal investigator. Quote, the three entities believe themselves to have been associates in their former human lives. Although allies, the three villains bickered constantly and were very competitive, each vying for control of their gang and trying to outdo the other. As they remember history, each was killed in a devastating attack by a rival gang of super-empowered villains about 6 years ago. As you can hear from the author's hedging, the ghosts' account of their own origins is not to be trusted. Quote, from a paranormal understanding, the three entities defy normal convention, as they seem to be a combination of haunting and possessing entities. The text goes on to describe how these strange entities came to possess William. Quote, William B. Stone was possessed one Midsummer's Eve about 5 years ago, while doing some late-night groundskeeping at the cemetery where he works. The three spirits were called to Earth by a mystic summoning. Something went wrong, and the spirits were able to escape and roam the Earth free of anyone's control. The spirits saw the weak-willed William as an opportunity ripe for the taking. Through him, they could have a second chance to cause havoc on Earth. Their combined strength of will was no match for the insipid cemetery worker, and they took control of his body without any great struggle. So the text itself seems a bit confused about what exactly these entities are. It seems apparent that they aren't actually ghosts, which means that they never actually had a life as supervillains before this. However, they were pre-existing possessing entities who were summoned into a cemetery. By what means, I cannot say, but the ritual failed in such a way that the three of them found themselves kicking around a cemetery with nothing to do, with number one, extremely specific false memories of being supervillains, two, false phantom memories of having been associates who were all killed in the same incident 6 years ago, and three, shared motivation to overwhelm this hapless cemetery worker and cram all together into his frail body. These phantom identities did not appear from absolutely nowhere, however. Quote, interestingly enough, William does not know the true names of his supernatural masters, and probably never will. The spirits simply created names from William B. Stone's memories and past, names which he could easily identify with, or which held special meaning for William. This made it all the more difficult for the spineless Mr. Stone to resist the entities, since he actually thought that he was fighting important figures from his family's past. For example, Larry Mindstone, which is one of the being's aliases, was the name of William's beloved deceased grandfather. A cruel trick indeed. It seems like quite a coincidence that William Stone had a grandfather named Larry Mindstone, as well as other relatives, as we will learn, named Merlin Spellstone and Stanley Livingstone. The Stone family would essentially have to have a multi-generational dumb joke of only marrying other people with Stone in their surname, and I feel that a family with such flair, with such joie de vivre, would not produce a limp fish like William B. Stone. But even assuming that this is pure coincidence or the result of a strange hereditary sense of humor, even then, some of these names, Merlin Spellstone, we're to believe that William Stone, currently possessed by a fake ghost wizard posing as Merlin Spellstone, also had an actual flesh and blood cousin or something who happened to be named Merlin Spellstone. I wonder whether Merlin Spellstone and Stanley Livingstone ever had get-togethers of the Stone family, compared notes, and had this sinking feeling like, oh, these weirdos have a fucking type. It would have been like that scene in Get Out, where he finds all the pictures of the girl with all her ill-fated ex-boyfriends. But anyway, William's family history is none of our concern. He just happens to be from an eccentric family who marry exclusively other families with Stone as part of their surname, some of whom are probably wizards, and then in a later unrelated incident, William Stone was possessed by three ghosts at the same time. Let's move on to the specifics about this multi-part supernatural being. First of all, William B. Stone has some of the worst stats I have ever seen in a Palladium stat block. IQ 8, ME 3, MA 4, and a PB of 7, presumably due to his hangdog expression. Incidentally, you can find a group shot, somehow, of all these personae on the MDC Instagram. William's occupation is listed as, quote, cemetery groundskeeper, and then in parentheses, lives on the premises. So William's life was already not going great before being triple teamed by ghost criminals. He is an ugly, dim-witted, weak-willed man working as a cemetery groundskeeper, living at the cemetery, where he apparently still works because of the present tense in the following passage. Quote, while working at the cemetery as William B. Stone, he appears dirty and sweaty and wears overalls or old tattered clothing. He is often heard muttering to himself. Stone walks with a slight limp and occasionally stutters. He is very timid, soft-spoken, indecisive, and submissive to others. Financially, William is doing a little bit better, although he doesn't know it. Quote, William knows that he has $3,217.12 in the bank. Unknown to him, there is an additional $92,000 in his account. This belongs to Merlin the Wizard. Merlin obviously has a low opinion of William, because Merlin, through whatever dark magic, managed to acquire $92,000 and thought, I'll just put this in William's checking account. He doesn't check his balance. He doesn't read his statements. He never even hits the ATM. He doesn't pay rent because he lives among the fucking dead. The cemetery covers his utilities. He dresses in tatters. Essentially, he has his Netflix on autopay and no other access to or desire for earthly wealth. So why not? Why not store your filthy lucre in his bank account? He'll never know the difference. But Merlin is not one to put all his eggs in one basket. Quote, another of a quarter of a million in gems belonging to Merlin have been buried by his zombies. $500,000, an auto mag, ammunition, and knives are buried in the grave of a woman named Sally Bankstone, belongs to Livingstone the Hunter. Mindstone doesn't have any money because he spends it all on research. I particularly enjoyed the detail of the $500,000 buried in the grave of a random woman named Sally Bankstone, which is just a little reward to the paranormal investigator who decides, I think these clues are coming together, but just to be sure, let's dig up all the graves of everyone with Stone in their name in this goddamn cemetery. What a great reward. We've been talking about Merlin, so let's conclude today by finishing up with him. Merlin Spellstone is a wizard. His true name is listed as Mortimer Spincaster, but it's not clear to me why or how he has a true name, given that it seems from the text that he was never actually a human. The only possibility this leaves open is that he is actually, originally, a primeval spirit of evil named Mortimer. I guess by God. As to his disposition, the confusion and the delusion run so deep. Quote, bold and confident, speaks with a loud, deep voice. Believes anything is possible and will try to convince others into agreeing with his philosophy. He has often convinced people that he really is a reincarnation of the legendary Merlin. In fact, there are times when Mortimer's act is so convincing that even he believes he is Merlin. So what we have here is a non-human spiritual being, actually named Mortimer, somehow, by someone, who was summoned to a cemetery in a ritual gone wrong, somehow was deluded into believing that he was originally a human being named Mortimer, homed in on the nearest namby-pamby groundskeeper at hand, decided to disguise himself as a person from that groundskeeper's past, happened upon one of that groundskeeper's relatives who happened to be named Merlin Spellstone. Like, that's his shoot name, Merlin Spellstone. Took on the identity Merlin Spellstone. Now Mortimer, while possessing William, goes by the name Merlin Spellstone and tries to convince others that he is a reincarnation of the mythical Merlin, and sometimes convinces himself accidentally that he is actually Merlin, not Merlin Spellstone, and not the other Merlin Spellstone, who is presumably like a mailman or whatever, but the Arthurian Merlin. What we have here is a confused individual. However, he is brilliant. He has an IQ of 24, which I remind you is an actual IQ score of 240. Quite high stats across the board, really, except for his physical beauty, which is 9. I think on account of his fashion sense. You can take a look at him on the Instagram, but there's a bit of a 1970s made-for-television movie about a wizard vibe to him. Merlin Spellstone mechanically is just a wizard. He has a number of spells, a lot of PPE, more than a Beyond the Supernatural arcanist would have, presumably, although of course there's no way to know. Merlin's ghostly delusion comes with a complete fabricated history, which is presented in his entry as fact. It says, quote, "The original Mortimer Spincaster was turned on to wizardry during the 1960s, when he was experimenting with drugs and studying the occult and Eastern philosophies. Mortimer grew up on a farm, and he loved the idea of being able to shape and control primeval forces of nature. Most of his crimes are acts of sabotage and destruction aimed at governments and government buildings and property. Prime targets include law enforcement vehicles, buildings, and property. He may even attempt to release prisoners from confinement, including other supervillains, just to spite law enforcement officials, especially the feds. His hallmark is to start a large fire using official documents and papers. If you're like me, you may be starting to soften to Merlin. Anyone who hates the federal government and starts fires with official documents can't be all bad. And Merlin is also helpful to his hapless slave. Quote, Mortimer uses zombies to do most of William's groundskeeping work, night chores, and to dig graves for Mortimer's loot, victims, or incriminating evidence. Mortimer is careful to use his undead slaves only at night or when the cemetery is empty. The isolation of the cemetery makes it a perfect cover and hideout. Now listen, if you're like me, and you come from Northern California, you know a few gray-haired hippies from the 60s who fancy themselves wizards. But in my experience, those people are mostly insufferable. Merlin is different. Merlin uses his zombies to do William's job for him. Those zombies just roam the cemetery, tools in hand, like great rotting cobbler elves, so that all the groundskeeping is done by the time the sun comes up. Merlin is a solid dude. However, paranormal investigators should still consider killing him because he has great loot. Quote, a sacrificial short sword, silver-plated and gem-encrusted, worth about $9,000, lightning sword, dagger of blindness, fireball cane, silver-plated dagger, wood druidic staff, and a vampire-killing kit. Now, the trick fireball cane doesn't really shoot fireballs. It's just a prop to make his fireball look more impressive. However, it does have the head of a dragon or gargoyle on the top, and that head is silver-plated. Valuable for resale, sure, but when has a player character ever sold a cool cane captured from a villain? This cane is just waiting to be liberated by the enterprising parapsychologist. The lightning sword and dagger of blindness are similarly only tricks. However, the sacrificial short sword is very valuable. The silver-plated dagger is really plated in silver. And though not specifically mentioned, the vampire killing kit presumably can be used to kill vampires. Merlin also has a gun and some other boring weapons, but the treasure doesn't stop there. I give you now a selection of items for paranormal investigators to loot after exercising Merlin Spellstone. Quote, books on magic, art and drawing, an old beat-up van brightly painted with swirling racing stripes, 2d6 times $100 in cash, books and video cassettes about monsters, magic, and the paranormal, a wardrobe of 1960s-style clothing, and finally, Merlin Spellstone's diary. Quote, the diary will tell of magic, no spells, and summonings, gripes about the government and laws, his criminal activity, mention the names of Larry Mindstone and Stanley Livingstone, and may allude to crimes and or strange experiments that they may have conducted. With a wardrobe of 1960s clothing, a cool gimmick cane, eccentric books and video cassettes about monsters and magic, the parapsychologist who busts Merlin Spellstone is, in my opinion, in real danger of becoming the next Merlin Spellstone, adding only another layer to this wobbly goddamn cake of delusion. After all that, what can I say about Merlin Spellstone? I love this character. I would absolutely use him independently as just like eccentric 1960s wizard as an antagonist for paranormal investigators. It's almost a shame to roll him into the triple threat concept because there's so much to do just with Merlin. But that's really my only complaint. Magic, possessing entity, a retro mid-20th century vibe. This all is a perfect fit for Beyond the Supernatural. And the somewhat campy home base at a cemetery, the beleaguered regular person with a secret, that is classic Trenchcoat horror. One can imagine Buffy Summers or Fox Mulder interviewing William Stone about his strange experiences that he refuses to speak of. So all in all, Triple Threat is off to a good start, and Merlin Spellstone is a top-notch Beyond the Supernatural antagonist, regardless of whether he is really Merlin Spellstone, or really the reincarnated Merlin, or secretly a strange ghostly not-ghost called Mortimer, or whatever. It doesn't even matter. If you're a wizard in a beat-up van with swirling racing stripes, I don't need the rest of your life story. You're fucking in. Join me next time as we delve back into the Z-Files to explore the next facet of Triple Threat on MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. This has been Mega Dumbcast. New episodes drop every day except for Sundays, when all the previous week's episodes drop in one big megasode on the top secret Patreon-only RSS feed. Contact or check out the show wherever you want. I am Mega Dumbcast on Twitter, Instagram, Gmail, Podbean, your favorite podcatcher, etc., etc. MDC, Palladium Books, Beyond the Supernatural, and all associated trademarks are property of Kevin Sambita. This season's theme song is Horizon Ending by Soft and Furious, whose work you can find at loyaltyfreakmusic.com. The theme for the Z-Files is Lightless Dawn by Kevin MacLeod. Kevin MacLeod's music, used under a Creative Commons license, can be found at incompetech.filmmusic.io. Dumbheads, I will catch you next time.